The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Explicit content may be heard throughout this podcast. Listening discretion is advised. What is up, my para geek stars? It is Wednesday, February 16th. I hope you guys had a wonderful, fantabulous Valentine's Day. We had a great one here at the household. If you had a spooky Valentine's Day, I'd love to hear about it. You can message me at Shaw Wooten on the Book of Faces, or you can go to the Instagram, exploring_para_per_podcast. You can always do the email thing too at epp_podcast@geeksparanormal.com. You can also hit me up at exploringpara1, the number one, on the Twit. I'm also on Twitch and Rumble and YouTube at Geeks Paranormal. There's a Tiki Talk. There's a Tiki Talkie. You can go to the Tiki Talkie and watch a couple of the funny shit I got there, which is going to be at E_P_P_G_P. There's so many different social media things out there here lately. It's not even funny. I always hashtag EPP or hashtag Geeks Lady or hashtag Geeks Paranormal. And you'll find me. You'll find me. You'll find my crew, my wonderful, awesome Geekster crew. Debbie and Kelly. Dustin is leaving us again. He's moving out to Arizona, so I wish him all the best, and I hope that he will still remain on as an occult specialist. That way we could get some of our information from his awesome brain when it comes to the paranormal. Tonight I have the awesomest Gavin and Paula Kelly from the Paranormal Journey into the Unknown. He's also the founder and lead investigator at the Phantasmic Ghost Hunters. There is so much this guy does, you guys, I can't even list them all. But just tune in, you'll be able to hear a little bit about what he does, has coming out. And I want to thank you guys so much for continuously listening in every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. here on ParaX Radio Network. Also on my archives page at Exploring the Paranormal with GeeksParanormal.com. You guys are absolutely fantabulous, and I love every one of you. So without further ado, let's get to the show. How you been?
Hanging in there.
Trying not to get what? I'm sorry.
Trying not to get sick.
Oh gosh, I know. Yeah.
I'm thinking her immune system is like, I don't know, Iron Man built.
Well, it's because I work with children, so they prepare me for every virus there is out known to man.
Right.
Blue now.
Well, I did see that you guys have been doing this for quite a bit, and usually it's just by yourselves.
Pretty much, yeah. Yep.
Big locations too. How do you How do you manage to do that?
Very carefully.
Lots of cameras. Good answer. Lots of cameras.
Good answer.
I am the person that has the calendar. He's like, okay, how is our how's this month looking for? Hold on.
Pretty much.
Okay, well, yeah, we got this weekend open and we got this weekend open. He goes, okay, which one of those two weekends you think would be best for us? I said, well, I guess I'd rather do it later month than I would be the earlier part of the month.
Yeah.
Y'all travel all over the place too, don't you?
Oh, yeah. We've been to the far reaches of Long Beach, California, to the Queen Mary, to the West Coast, and far East Coast, St. Albans Sanatorium.
I want to go on the Queen Mary. Man.
Oh, Queen Mary is pretty cool.
I bet that was cool. I've seen quite a few things on it, read up quite a few things on it. Mm-hmm. And there was just you two on the Queen Mary?
Kind of, sort of. We did a sneak around.
Oh.
Well, I contacted them and they were like, yeah, you can come over here and film on the Queen Mary, but we've got three sections. It's $5,000 for the decks, $10,000 for the engine room, and $12,000 for, I think, the Lido deck, the upper deck.
Wow, they're proud of that ship, aren't they?
And I'm sitting there going, okay. So what we ended up doing was we got a ticket. We went on, we got a room, went on board. When everybody went to sleep, that's when we went and walked around.
Hey, that's a good, I might have to do that. That sounds, yeah, like the cheapest route.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still trying to figure out how some of these other shows like Sam and Kobe, how they're able to go
right
to
Kobe
and
well, you've seen the car they drive, haven't you?
Yeah, I know, right? And let's see, what's the other one? BuzzFeed. They were on Queen Mary.
Yeah. Overnight, I think, was on the Queen Mary. Well, the YouTube channel is Overnight. I can't remember what they call themselves. It's Elton and Matt and all them. They've been to a lot of places too. And the only thing I can think of is they got some good money coming in from YouTube.
Maybe.
Because I don't see how they could rent a whole hotel.
Yeah, I don't see that either. Unless you're like Sam and Kobe, where they're like, what, 12 million subscribers? They're rolling in at least three figures a month.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, my gosh. But you guys, how long have you guys been doing this?
2012.
Yeah.
That's the year I started. Yay.
2012.
Yeah, that's 10 years.
Well, how long have you been interested in it?
Oh, God. I mean, I've always been interested in the paranormal ever since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Did something happen?
My mom, okay, let's backtrack here. My mom got into, well, Ancestry, and she started digging into our family and started, you know, working on the family trees and getting, you know, different back histories and stuff. And I was trying to figure out where everybody was located from. Mm-hmm. And my mom got up in the obsession of going to different cemeteries to find headstones of our ancestors.
Oh, cool.
And then she would take pictures. And if it was one of those tombstones that were hard to read, we'd come up with this big old sheet of butcher paper and we'd tape it to the thing. And we just, you know, we would rub it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we had all that. And my very first experience that I had was in a cemetery.
Really? Of all places?
And wow. It was basically, I was waiting on my mom. She was, you know, doing her thing. And I was about, I guess, 13 years old.
You're young.
And I was sitting on one of those, you know, stone benches. And I was waiting on her. And all of a sudden, I heard this little girl or little child giggling. I turned around and I was looking around and this is a cemetery out in the country.
Oh, wow.
There are no houses around it. You just see cornfields and farming, you know.
Ding, 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 ding.
Because yes, you actually
had, home.
You had to drive down a gravel road to get to the cemetery. And I don't even want to go into the subject of the whole, yeah, I get it. We, a lot of people were buried on their own property at the edge of farm fields and stuff. I get it. But it's just one of those deals that when you drive off of one gravel road and you turn, you have to go off to another gravel road to get where you're at. You're out in the boonies.
Yeah.
And you hear the banjos.
So I'm out there. I'm sitting. I'm waiting for her. I get this experience of this little girl giggling, or this child giggling. And I turn around and looking around, and you're pretty well, you could see for miles. You cannot see, you know, nothing around. You know, houses or nothing. Nobody is in the cemetery. Just us. You had to park on the road and walk up the kind of like a hill type slanted area to get to the cemetery, because there's no getting into the cemetery. You had to park off the road. And the last person that was buried in the cemetery was like in the 1970s. So everything per that was, you know, that's how old this generation of the cemetery has been. And there's some really extremely old tombstones there. And we are actually, we're looking at her great grandfather. And that too, we were going to see, and she was doing the rubbings up. And then I heard the children laughing and giggling. And then that's when I told mom, because I was 12, 13, you know, years old. And I'm like, no, I'm not, you know. So I go and sit. I said, Mom, go into the car. And I told her experience. And then later on, I told her about the whole situation. She said, did the kid say anything? I was like, I don't know what it said. And so she ended up looking up the whole directory. She said there was about 9 children buried in that cemetery that ranges from the ages of like 9 months old to about 8 or 9.
Oh, wow.
So she kind of, and my mom was always one of those that believed, and she always had the premonition of when we were in the house, she knew when my grandfather came to visit, which is her dad.
Yeah.
Because I lost my grandfather when I was about 9 years old. And so it was one of those deals. She always knew when he was in the house because he smelt a certain smell.
Oh.
And she always knew when he was smell. And also,
that just sounds so funny. He smelt.
Well, I mean, you know, if you someone smells like a Lucky Strike cigarette, and he smelled of the old cheap bourbon. So if you had, so between the two, you would smell that. You would know that, you know, he was in the house.
He was around.
And we also inherited his bird that talked. And
those things can live to be old.
Yeah, what does his bird say?
Well, it was Sam, and Sam would always say, because he always called my grandpa Daddy.
Oh.
So occasionally we would hear the bird holler Daddy. Oh. So, and then right after that, we would always smell, and then it was just one of those deals that we had that experience in the house the whole time. Mm-hmm. From then on, we have caught stuff in our house, because my mom always believed that, you know, people travel to visit family when they pass. And I swear up and down, which I still haven't found that picture to this day, because he still hasn't seen it. I can't find it. My mom was one of those, was extreme person that always took pictures all the time. And I mean, I have hundreds and thousands of pictures. And my mom has passed away, and I have inherited all of her stuff. And so I have picture albums I still can't find of all the stuff of different things that we've did. But I found the cemetery albums of all the cemeteries we visited all over the place. And it's just one of those things that, I've had experiences throughout my whole childhood, I guess you probably will say. I mean, I had a near-death experience when I was 4 years old.
Oh, gosh.
And pretty well, ever since then, when I was little, after that, I had an imaginary friend. And now I'm debating if it was actually an imaginary friend or not, because people, you know, people have actually told stories since then that their child, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And there might be something to that. So.
Was it drop bed fed?
I don't know if he was my, oh, that'd be kind of scary. As a child, I don't know though. My daughter is kind of weird. I guess it's because of me, because ever since she was born, I mean, heck, whenever I was pregnant with her, I went trick-or-treating with my boys with a baby tearing out of my stomach. So I guess it just all happened when she was in the womb. But she doesn't get scared of that kind of stuff. She doesn't. She just laughs at it. So I guess I'm grateful for that. My oldest son runs from it, and he's 17, and got a 7-year-old. I just think it's hilarious. Do you have any kind of, do you see them now, or is it just something that you, can you sense them in a room?
I can at my mom's house occasionally. He's actually seen my mom.
Yeah, she showed up on the wall.
My mom has made her presence known in our, in her house.
I was sitting at the computer doing something, and I kind of turn my head, and then I'm seeing there's this figure standing in the doorway. So I'm just like, you know, nonchalantly going, click.
It's also you woken up in the middle of the night, and she's standing there beside the bed looking at you.
That's freaky.
Yeah, that happened one
that
time.
That would be kind of freaky if my in-law was sitting, yeah.
Well, yeah. He never had the chance to meet my mom because my mom passed when I was 22. And so he was like, there's this lady that I, you know, and she started describing her to a T. And I'm over here going, that's just like my mother. I'm digging out pictures. I'm going, is it her? And it's her. And I guess he has seen my mom back when she looked her prime in her 30s. So you don't see that's my mom cool. like she was before she passed, because my mom died of cancer. And she was brittle, and she, of course, had no hair and everything because of the chemo treatments and everything. So what he saw was someone of, you know, she looked healthy. So that made me kind of happy that she doesn't walk. You know, she comes to visit. I don't know if she's just a visiting spirit or if she actually is like, that's my house. I'm not leaving. You know, she's never mean to, she's never, you know, she's, I think, like a protective, maybe a visiting spirit, because she'll come and you don't hear her all the time. You don't, you know, she doesn't show up all the time. It's just like once in a blue moon, she'll like, you know, make herself known or something strange happens. And that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Freddy's there.
Yeah, Freddy's there.
Freddy?
No, not Krueger.
No. There's a little boy. Well, he's actually a traveling neighborhood spirit.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, really?
My parents' house was built in 1917. And prior to that, the property was built, belonged to a plantation. And of course how plantations go on to where they sell the property into sections, becomes neighborhoods and so forth and so on. And so he kind of travels the neighborhood because he actually died on the property in the plantation house. The plantation house still exists. They're in the process of remodeling it right now. There's a family living in it, and they're in the process of remodeling it from top to bottom. And there was a total of 7 children. 3 children died of tragic accident. No, 4 children died of tragic accidents in that family. We had Freddie, who had died of whooping cough. Mm-hmm. He was about 4 years old. You had, what was the girl's name? Do you remember?
Who?
The girl that got hit by the train.
Oh, my.
Yeah, there was a, she was 15 or 16.
Maggie?
Maggie, that's it. She was 15 or 16 at a time, and she got, they were coming over the tracks coming from a youth picnic on a Sunday.
Oh, my.
A whole wagon got hit.
A whole wagon full of children, and she was one of the, or teens, put it this way, teens. And they were all on this wagon. And for some reasons, I don't know if the horse got spooked or whatever it is, but they got dislodged from the wagon. I found the whole story. There was a whole, I found the old newspaper article, read the whole thing. I did a whole research on my old neighborhood. And she, the train hit the wagon, killed three of them instantly, and two of them died later in the hospital. Maggie being one of them that died later in the hospital 3 days later from her injuries. The other one was waiting at a train station, which was not very far from the house. It was like maybe 4 miles from the house. The gentleman was waiting at the train station for a train, and some guy came off the train. I don't know exactly the whole story. I found the article, but the article is not very detailed. But there was a, I don't know if the guy got off the train or the guy came out of the train depot, but he basically had a gun. He was basically robbing everybody that was standing there waiting for the train or had, you know, it was a, you know, bypass, whatever. And I guess the gentleman, the oldest son was like 21 at the time. He was trying to stop the robber. The robber turned around and killed him.
Oh, gosh.
And I can't remember what the fourth one. Oh, the fourth one was not actually the child. It was the child, the grandchild. And it was the mother and grandchild. And they had built, after the father and mother had passed away, some of the kids wanted to stay, but they didn't want to stay in the mansion anymore. So they kept a couple of sections of the property and they built their own houses and started that neighborhood, which is, and so the oldest boy built the house, and that became the very first house that got built in the neighborhood outside of the plantation. So basically he built that, he got married. He actually married one of the girls that was the victim of the tragic train accident survived. And so she married her. They moved into the house. And of course, she became pregnant, had a child. And the tragedy is where it struck. She ended up dying from what is it called? She had the child. The child lived to be about a year and a half old. And then something tragically happened to her afterwards. And so I don't remember how she died. But the baby died first, and then 3 days later, she died.
Oh, wow.
And they both died in that, yeah, in that house. And we've actually investigated that house, and we've actually caught the lady and the baby standing in the bathroom doorway of that house, and she's holding the baby. And we've actually caught her.
We have the image of it.
Yeah. And we've actually saw a reflection of her in one of the windows.
Yep.
Of her dressed in her white. It's like it was like in the 1920s dress style. So you have the upper cover bun dressing, and then you had that long skirt that went with it past her knees. Very modest looking out. She looked like a very modest woman and had her hair kind of pinned back. And I actually have a picture of what the lady actually looked like, because I did research and found her picture of actually what she looked like and what the little and what the child looked like.
That is awesome.
I actually have a picture of all the family. I had contacted the last, I think it's his great granddaughter that lives out in California, because she lives out in California. She actually had pictures of her family, and she sent me pictures of the original plantation owners and the three children that had passed away and everything. And so, but yeah.
Wow. How awesome is that? It's not every day you get to see all that stuff.
Oh, I know, right? Well, the neat thing is when we were investigating that particular house, I set up cameras similar to a scene from Poltergeist. You know, when they had the staircase and they had camera one, camera two, camera three, so they could capture everything.
Yeah.
Well, I had one digital still facing the bathroom. Then I had a video camera behind that one filming that first camera.
Yeah.
Then I had a Canon filming the video camera, filming the digital camera.
Nice.
The digital camera is the only one that actually picked up the thing.
Oh my gosh.
You can see it. Wow. So basically the video camera that's filming the digital camera, you can see it on there, but the small camera is the one that picked it up. And then finally I was like, okay, so if there's anybody in there, go ahead and show yourself. And right after I said that, there is a silhouette of a person standing smack dab right in the middle of the doorway.
Oh my God. I bet that was, did you do a dance? I would have done a dance.
Whenever we showed those two slides during our Ghostology 101 at like the libraries and stuff like that, people are like, oh, yeah.
Well, you went into Ghostologies. Now you have more than just that. You have so much. I don't even know how you do it.
Neither do I.
You want to go ahead and name off all the stuff you got?
Well, right now you can go to, on Paraflix.
Yep.
Roku TV, Apple TV, Fire TV. You can watch Ghostology 101, which was filmed over at the Paducah Library by Comcast. And later on this year, we are going to be releasing the full season of 1 and 2 of Truth or Legend in Your Hometown and The Paranormal Journey into the Unknown. Abandoned Paranormal Road Trip and Kentucky Haunts.
Oh my gosh. Now do you, okay, because I did read up on your bio and you do all the editing on it or just the filming?
Well, I've been doing a lot of the cinematography, but when COVID hit, I actually lost one of my editors in Burbank.
The second
editor was like, you know what? I'm leaving California. I'm going to go move to Montana and be on a ranch with my mom. So those two editors are gone. So I wound up bringing on another editor. Is that the one, Scott?
Scott.
Okay. Yeah. I brought him on and see, at the time he had his own web series and he also has his own team. But he was really gung-ho to help us out. I mean, he just jumped in. He's like, all right, let's do this. Let's get this done. Well, 2 weeks later, he's like, dude, I can't juggle this. So he quit. And finally, I found another guy that just graduated from Full Sail University.
Nice. So I'm thinking myself
going, yes, this is going to be good. I haven't heard from him in 3 months.
What?
Yeah. So basically,
that's all the lame.
Yep.
Yeah, if I'm going to spend that much on a college, which I did, I went to Art Institute of Pittsburgh online. Yeah.
I would love to go to Full Sail. I mean, that's a cool place to go, but I self-taught myself on everything. So,
well, the funny thing is about that kind of stuff is that everything is upgrading all the time. So you're constantly having to teach yourself anyway. And I'm sitting there looking at it because when I went to school, we didn't have PHP and to tell my age, we did have PHP, but it wasn't like as popular as it is now. And JavaScripting wasn't as popular. We still had Flash.
Yeah.
So it's going, looking at this and seeing HTML5 and XML and CSS. And now I code, I'm a coder. So seeing all this and doing all this, it's like, constant teaching yourself new things. Cause now you got the UX and UI editors, you got web designers, you got graphic designers, you got web and graphic designers. And it's crazy how vast and many names that just really go together into one thing, honestly. Because when I went to school, the web designer, we did coding. And so we did developing and designing and graphics and everything. But now you got specific jobs where we already have a graphics designer over here. Well, right. I can do both. Will you pay me both?
And they'll be like, no.
Nope. But it is crazy. Yeah. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's all right. But back to what I was saying about, self-teaching myself the editing. I wound up getting help from, you know, a couple people. But see, here's the thing. Originally, the Truth or Legends in Your Hometown was going to be on A&E. It was going to be probably right alongside Ghost Hunters.
Now we're going to be right back after this brief break.
Millions of people are affected by the Para-X bug.
I realize that it is something that will stay with me for the rest of my life and long into the afterlife as well.
If you have the Para-X bug, there is hope.
With a nightly visit to the Para-X website and intensive past life regression therapy, I can control it.
Even with the Para-X bug, I can still lead an active life of radio show hosting, paranormal investigating, evidence checking, attending conferences, book writing, keeping up with the latest technology, and still keep my 40-hour-a-week day job.
If you think that you have the Para-X bug or know someone who might, visit para-x.com. And remember, you are not alone.
I am not alone.
I
am not alone.
The Para-X bug may cause the urge to chase shadow people, visit exotic haunted locations, adopt a pug wedgie, or spend all of your time trying to figure out the laws and principles of paranormal investigation. Listening to Para-X may increase these effects.
Sudden visions of full-body apparitions or feeling the covers being pulled off you in the middle of the night by unseen hands may also be signs of exposure to the Para-X bug.
The use of Para-X may be habit-forming, and an overwhelming desire to provoke spirits may be a serious side effect. If these symptoms last more than 4 hours, you should quickly consult a trusted witch and have her cast a "What the hell are you thinking?" spell on you. If symptoms persist, please contact the Para-X Radio Network Homeland Security Team for further instructions.
The Para-X bug may cause urges for late-night speaking with spirits and ghosts. Listening to Para-X may increase these effects. Overwhelming desire to try provoking a spirit may be a serious side effect. Those with Para-X bug effects lasting more than 4 hours should consult Para-X or see a professional. Sudden outbursts at the mention of orbs may be a sign of exposure to the Para-X bug. Use of Para-X may be habit-forming. Use caution when engaging in Para-X chat.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio and the all-new Para-X Vision can help. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio and Para-X Vision, programming for the open mind.
Hi, I'm Kimberly Juarez with Cat Paranormal of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Willow Lehman Shunt, psychic medium, Dark Nola Paranormal, New Orleans.
And I'm Jerry Ayers with Supernatural Investigators of Minnesota. And together, we are The Calling. Every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on ParaXRadioNetwork.com.
I told you we're going to be right back. Wasn't that long, right? Right.
That would have been so cool.
But we were in the final negotiations and everything, and pandemic hit. So it got shelved. And of course, since we know that with the pandemic hit, a lot of networks lost a lot of money, they decided to go streaming. So
yeah.
There's that a lot disappeared.
Of streaming going on now.
Mm-hmm. That's the only way. But during that time, I wound up getting, you know, I got insight, idealisms. They didn't really take my hand and walk me. They just said, okay, well, this is kind of like what you need to do. So I had an executive producer from A&E Networks that was helping me. I had a content creator from Netflix that was helping me. And then I had two additional executive producers, different places. And what they did is they gave me the ideas, the idealism, the way to make things flow. And that's how I went ahead and did the first episode of Truth and Legends in Your Hometown for season one. And believe it or not, it took, I mean, it's sad to say, but there was a lot of trial and error and testing. It took a year just to do one episode.
Well, you got how many different teams did you have on that one?
We had two teams on that one.
Okay. I thought yeah. I saw. What was it that we you had? Got,
Wisconsin and Tennessee are the only ones on that first episode.
I mean, all together. The first,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Altogether, we have about 20 teams involved in the project.
28 teams in 20 states.
Yeah. 28 teams in 20 states.
Yeah.
Of on the project. So we haven't filmed everybody yet. We have filmed enough to do two seasons with.
Yeah, so far
we
did six teams for season one and 16 for season two. So that's 12 teams already.
Oh my. Did y'all do a crybaby bridge? Tell me you did a crybaby bridge.
No, we didn't do a crybaby bridge, but we've got so many. We've got so many things that, I mean, it's been interesting. Of some of the stuff that we have worked with mm-hmm. our teams. And mm-hmm. it's kind of, you know, I come up with some ideas because I have some of them going, okay, well, we can do this, this, and this. And so that's kind of cool. Here's what I've got. And the deal is I give them stuff they've never heard of and they go mm-hmm. check it out. They come back and they're like, this is cool. We're going to see what we're getting. And I was like, okay.
Yeah,
because I do a lot of history research. I do a lot when I go into stuff. I want to find out what the backstory is of a location.
Right.
And I get in with the teams and I'll talk to the teams and I was like, OK, here's what I have. You pick out. I'll give them like 10 locations. From there, they figure out if it's something that they could possibly do.
You only get four.
Yes, I know they get four. They pick four mm-hmm. out of the 10. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they don't pick what I have. No. They throw, here's a cool story we found out. And they'll throw it to me and stuff I didn't know. So we always conjugate with each other about what we're going to do. And then they end up picking out their four. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple of teams for season three that are eager for us to go film them this year. So... we will be making a trip to, I know for sure, Ohio this year.
Nice.
And Pennsylvania for sure, because those are two teams that are ready this year.
North Carolina.
Well, we don't know about
Indiana.
Indiana, yes. North Carolina, I don't know yet because our North Carolina team has kind of...
Oh, yeah, they just banded.
Yes, they did. And I've got to figure out how we're going to work North Carolina right now. So if you know a North Carolina team that would like to be part of a project...
I may.
It was crazy when we first started the project. I put out an ad stating, this is what we're going to be doing. This is how it's going to work. And man, we got... hit by so many people. It was unreal.
I had to start taking names. And I was like, okay, we don't need no more than two teams in each state because I don't want to oversaturate mm-hmm. a team, you know, crossing bounds with another team on stuff. And so, and I like how the thing is with Truth and Legends in Your Hometown, each team investigates differently. There is never, so far, we have never seen two teams do things exactly like maybe we do. Or, you know, we've learned different concepts of how they do stuff. And we've actually taught them a couple of things that we do are a little different than they do.
You always learn.
And so we have learned a lot from just doing this project, mm-hmm. just working with different teams mm-hmm. and different background phenomenons, different personalities, different genres. I mean, we have learned a lot and we're still a whole lot more to come. Since we've started the project, of course, we've done our hometown. Mm-hmm. We have two teams from Kentucky that represents Kentucky outside of us. We have, where did we go? We have an Indiana team that we filmed with. We have a Wisconsin team we have filmed with. We have two Tennessee teams. We've got one Tennessee team that we've already filmed. We have another one that we're fixing to hopefully film, if not this year, next year with. We have done a Oklahoma team, a Texas team,
Alabama,
an Alabama team,
Florida,
Florida team. I'm trying to think.
Funny, I'm from Alabama and I have an Oklahoma team.
We haven't had an Alabama. We don't have anybody in Alabama, do we? No.
Yeah, we do.
Who?
Southern Ghost Girls.
Oh, yeah, the Southern Ghost Girls are Alabama.
Yeah. Alabama. We filmed Alabama.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was a fun trip.
Oh, yeah.
All of them had been fun trips. And I was fascinated with all the locations.
Michigan.
Yeah, we forgot about. We have Michigan. I'm trying to think who all else we've done. Michigan was fun because deal is, we had our team up there telling us, that week that you're coming, there's not going to be any snow. It's going to be perfect weather.
Yep.
We drive up there. It's a snowstorm hit. So we're stuck.
Oh, my God. Oh.
We can do this. No, we can't. I look at the girl we got home and says,
yeah,
make sure the next time we make sure that we go to like Michigan or Chicago or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania.
No, I will never go to Chicago.
Hell no.
If make sure those are like in June, July, August, maybe September.
I got an ex-military buddy that lives in Chicago and he even suggests don't ever come here.
Yeah. I'm still thinking about all the other states we've been to. I mean, we've been to a lot.
But isn't that one cemetery on the outskirts of Chicago, the one where they took the picture of that lady that was sitting on the grave?
Bachelor's Grove.
Yes. See, I've always wanted to go there, and now it's like,
I want to go to Joliet. Joliet's just south of Chicago.
I think that would be okay. Like, there's a convention in Chicago. Trying to think of what it's called. I think it's called IllCon, I think.
Uh-oh.
But it was pretty reasonable in the pricing of the tables and everything. But I don't know if they're booked up yet or not. But it's on north of Chicago, I believe.
Mm. You see Utica?
Hmm?
Utica or whatever it's called, that little town.
Ithaca.
That's what it's called.
I don't know.
Cool place. I like that.
Yeah, that was a nice place. And that was the one time we did go north of Chicago and we actually went there. That was actually a nice place. And everybody was nice there. You didn't have craziness. And
we got lost in the mall. We were in the mall and we couldn't find the exit for like 4 hours.
Yeah,
huge
two-story mall. And we're over here, kept walking and walking. Do you remember which exit we came into? Nope. We're walking around. Wait a minute. I remember the Chinese restaurant.
Right?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, because the exit actually looked like a store.
Are you serious?
Yeah. A glass door, glass window, but it had Chinese statues on each side. So I thought it was
a restaurant.
Yeah. But yeah. That was the exit.
Well,
we should have paid more attention when we went in.
You know, I never look behind me when I go into a mall. So I don't know if I would ever see the two things on the. No, I probably wouldn't. Now, our mall is weird. We have like window glass with like, well, before the little shopping store was out, there was a glass, like, I guess, frame shadow boxes with clothes in them as you go in.
Oh, okay.
So that was that. And then you had restaurants on the right hand side. But now our mall is pretty much desolate. It's not really busy anymore. The only thing that's really keeping it busy is the movie theater.
Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I think that's about everywhere across the United States because
nobody wants to work.
Our mall is crap now. I think we've got like 7 or 8 stores in our mall that's closed down. So
they raised the rent, so nobody can actually stay there anymore.
Yeah, that's what's going on at this one. They raised the rent. Even we had a Buffalo Wild Wings that was in our mall, and we went there every Thursday for buy one, get one. And they closed down months ago. They just couldn't afford it anymore.
Damn.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy there. Crazy times. Well, y'all have been investigating since 2012. What kind of equipment do you use? Do you just go in with your feelers and a camera, or?
Well, when we first started, all we had was a Hi8 Sony Handycam that was running on the cassettes.
Oh, yeah. I got one of those.
I had a digital recorder that, you know, with a handheld one when I was in college. We had one digital camera, which was a GE. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we didn't even have, quote unquote, you know, equipment. That right there was just a camera to play with and something to take notes when you're in college. So back to her house, she started having some strange things happen.
Yeah, I had a fire in January of 2012 at the house, which is my parents' house, by the way. I inherited my parents' house. And I had a house fire. After we did a remodel, it didn't destroy the house. It just destroyed part of one of the rooms. I had more water damage from the fire department than I did the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had to go in and basically, you know, fix, you know, more of that than I did the fire. The fire was contained to one wall. We had it contained to one wall. It was not anything big and major, but because of how they do stuff, because firemen are in there more worried about getting a fire out and protecting the family than they are about how they go about doing it. So we had to end up remodeling that and remodel the other part of the house because how they did it. But anyway, after that, I don't know if it targeted something or it made something become. All I know is changes were made.
Something was uprooted.
Something was uprooted. And after that is when I started having strange things happen in the house.
Yep.
This
is before me.
We had a basketball. Now, my kids at the time were like 14, 15 years old. They were
married at the time.
Yeah. And they are in their room playing. At the time, my brother-in-law was staying with us. He was hanging out in the living room watching a Western or something on TV. And I was in my room doing my thing. And all of a sudden, we heard boom, 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 going all the way down the hallway. I thought it was the kids doing something. The kids opened the door. They were looking down the hallway. My brother-in-law came up to the hallway. He heard it too. And he's like, who's banging on the wall? And I'm like, there's no banging on the wall. And it sounded like someone was taking a basketball or a large ball and was bouncing it up and down the hallway. Number one, there was no ball. Number two, everybody in the house heard it. I was not the only one. Now, back that up, before that happened, that was the final call when someone said they finally figured out there's something in the house. That first they thought I was nuts.
Isn't that how it always goes? I'm the crazy one.
Because I would blame the kids. At first, I blamed the kids for a few things because I'd come home. All the cabinet doors were open. All the drawers were open. Kids were like, no, we haven't been in the kitchen, you know, blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that. Okay. Well, when I don't know what it was, but all of us were not home at the time. We had just came back from somewhere. We go into the kitchen. I was like, who left the cabinet doors open? And so that went on repetitively. The TV channels got changed by themselves. Let's see. There was banging on the pipes. I had old copper pipes. So we were trying to figure out if it was actually paranormal or not because the house is old. But all I know is that in the middle of the night, we would hear, and it sounded like Morse code.
Oh my gosh.
But it had that. And then one night, at the time, my ex-husband I was married to, he is always a heavy sleeper. He's one of those that never wakes up in the middle of the night. He's out. He's out. He will sleep through a tornado, anything else. You know, he's one of them. I'm a light sleeper, but this was one night he actually woke up and heard it the same time I heard it. And it sounded like a child saying, "Hello."
Oh, no.
He got up and checked on the kids. Kids are passed out in their beds. And he comes back and said, he looked at me and goes, "Did you hear that?" And I was like, "Yeah. What did you hear?" He goes,
"I'll tell you if you tell me."
So out of all that whole combination of stuff, that's when I just started digging into the history of the house. And that's how I found out the house was part of the plantation and all the story I told you before.
Wow.
And all the deaths, documented deaths that I had found, because the Maggie girl died half a block down from her plantation house because that's where the tracks were at.
Oh, wow.
So that was in the house, though. And the deal is, the story on her, she actually hangs around the neighborhood also, but people have actually seen her walking the tracks.
Wow.
So that's the South Side legend. They call it the South Side legend of the Lady of the Tracks.
Might be time to get a camera set up.
But it is still a working railroad track to this day. That railroad tracks line system has existed before the Civil War. But yeah, the line still works to the day, and they still have train traffic through there. But anyway, that's when we decided to go in November of 2012. We decided to investigate my house.
Oh, your own house? Yeah, they're like, "No, let's not do that. Don't see your house. We're gonna
nope."
Rebels.
So now comes the fun part, how this all happened. She told me what was going on. And see, my house was two houses down and across the street was my house.
Block and a half.
I was next to the railroad tracks.
Yeah, he is directly next to the railroad tracks where the
gosh.
I'll open up the bedroom window and you can see the railroad tracks. But I was sitting there flipping through channels because I was bored, and I came across something that was night vision, and I thought maybe it was like a war movie or something. Growing up, my dad made me watch war movies, so I kind of thought that's what it was. But then these three guys were running around, and they had cameras, and, you know, they're in nighttime, and they're walking with just their cameras, and they're always saying, "Look at this. We turn the light up. This is what we see." I'm like, so I started watching it. Well, she started telling me what she was experiencing in the house, and I'm like, "That sounds something like what I'm watching on TV." She goes, "What are you watching?" Some show called Ghost Adventures.
Yeah, I didn't even know Ghost Hunters existed.
Ghost Adventures.
It doesn't matter. In general, I didn't know there was actually such a thing as Ghost Hunters.
Well, yeah.
I was having experiences, and I thought I was the crazy person. I thought our whole family had gone nuts. I thought the house was nuts. I mean, I didn't know what to think. So he comes and tells me, he goes, "This stuff is real." Yeah. And there's actually people that goes and investigate houses. I'm like, "Oh, this could be interesting."
So this was kind of like basically when they really started working their way up, and you can contact them. So I'm a smooth talker. I wound up getting a hold of Aaron.
Oh, Aaron. Yes.
I talked to him and I told him what was going on. And I talked to him on Twitter. Unfortunately, that's just the place you can go and talk to people.
He loved Twitter at first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Until someone started duping his accounts and then creating new ones. But, a lot of people really didn't do MySpace or Facebook or all that stuff. It was just basically, Twitter. That was the place.
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking to him, we were messaging back and forth, and I was telling him what was going on in the house. And I told him that we're going to go ahead and investigate it. I go, "I don't know exactly what we're going to do, but, I've seen what you guys do, so I'm going to go ahead and do that." And he goes, okay, so what kind of gear do you got? And I'm like, Sony Handycam, Hi8 with the cassette. He's like, damn. A digital recorder for what I used in college. He goes, oh, okay, those are good. digital camera, GE. He goes, Okay, well, let's just back up. Do you have an EMF detector? I said, EM what? He goes, the thing that lights up and goes beep, beep, beep. I'm like, no. He goes, the ones that we use on the show. I'm like, oh, no. He goes, well, you need to get yourself an EMF detector. So I started doing research. I went to Amazon and I found, at the time, you know, I wasn't real rich or anything. So I had to find something, you know, economically cost efficient. So I wound up getting these things called the Ghost Meter Pro. And I bought two of them. So we used that. Now I'm sitting there figuring, I mean, it's efficient for EMF. It's highly effective because the frequencies on it, it works. Just don't use those other options. You know, the yes and no thing.
Right.
I've already cracked it. It's a pattern. I mean, you know exactly when it's going to say yes or it's going to say no. I mean,
kind of like the ovulus. I mean,
So we took the Ghost Meter Pros and we went to investigator house. Now, this is before I cracked the code, of course, but things coincided together and it ran in parallel. So I don't think that it was, you know, faking at the time, but we had a white noise generator on her old phone and we were in the room. We were asking questions and I think she was like asking, who is the child that's here? And right across the white, it was an EVP recorder, wasn't it? It was on the phone, I think, that we used.
Yeah.
And it came up and said, Freddie, like that. And she's like, okay. It just said Freddie.
It said Frederick.
Frederick. Okay, Frederick. And her dog got scared. And it was really bizarre and weird, but if you watched on a digital camera, you see an orb or a ball of light fly from the corner of the room right into the Ghost Meter, and that's when it went off, and that's when Frederick came across the thing.
Yeah, that's too coincidental.
So she went ahead and did research, and that's when she found out that his name was Freddie, and he found his tombstone and everything.
Oh, wow.
There's more to the story. We had a grumpy old man living there, too, which is his father.
Oh.
And to find out, back in the day, in 1898, I didn't throw this in here because this had to get to this part. In 1896. In 1896, him and his wife got in to do a disgruntled battle of didn't like each other anymore, you know.
Oh no.
And in that time period they didn't believe in divorce.
Right.
So he let his wife and the kids have the mansion. And exactly where my house is sitting is where he built a two-room shanty and he died in it.
Oh, great. And that concludes part one for Gavin and Paula Kelly. Stay tuned next week for part two and the finale. Coming up soon, I will have Allison Church. It was a wonderful interview with Allison. Can't wait to speak to her again. And I got Patty Negri coming up. So if you've got questions for Patty Negri, please let me know. My interview with her to pre-record is next week. Thank you guys for tuning in. Have a wonderful rest of your week and a wonderful weekend.